kill somebody.
Can I kill somebody right here?
Hare Krishna. So this is the historic 26 Second Avenue. How many of you are coming here for the first time? Wow. And how many of you are really excited to be here? Okay. How does it? Oh, I see. Just tighten that. Lakshmi Nishinga Prabhu, thank you for coming. Hare Krishna. I saw Mother Patrarajini, but I didn't see you. Hare Krishna, Patrarajini. So, this is where it all started. Prabhupada came in September 1965, although he landed in New York, but he went straight to Butler, Pennsylvania. He stayed there for a while, just about a couple of weeks, and then he came to New York, and he actually wanted to be in a big city because Prabhupada came with a big mission, and he knew that staying in a small place like Butler, Pennsylvania is not really going to create any wave. So although it was coming to New York was absolutely uncertain for him at that time, he just happened to know one Dr. Mishra, and he knew that Dr. Mishra was an impersonalist, and his business, he was, although he was a medical doctor, but he was teaching yoga, and that was a big craze at that time in America. So he was just trying to create some, just create some name for himself, and going along with the popular trend. And he had a little following, and Srila Prabhupada was staying at his place, Ananda Ashram. But when Dr. Mishra saw that his followers are becoming very much attracted to Srila Prabhupada, he sensed trouble. So he politely asked Srila Prabhupada to move out. And then Srila Prabhupada got a place in New York, and but he couldn't stay there for very long. All his possessions were stolen. Although he didn't have very much, but whatever he had was very important for him at that time, like his tape recorder, his typewriter, because his whole business was to translate scriptures, Vedic scriptures. And then, by the time Prabhupada got to know some young boys, and one of the young boys, David Allen, just moved into one loft. And so Prabhupada also, David Allen agreed to share that with Prabhupada. Prabhupada, that place was occupied by one of the young acquaintances of Srila Prabhupada at that time. And when he got to know that Prabhupada was looking for a place, he just lamented, "Oh, I had that place. I wish you told me earlier. And I just gave it off to David Allen." And then Prabhupada spoke to David, and David got to know about it. And David also was somewhat attracted to Srila Prabhupada. So he allowed Prabhupada to share the loft with him. And initially David was very submissive and very responsive, responding very nicely, very favorable to Krishna Prabhupada's teachings. And as a matter of fact, in David, Prabhupada saw one of his first disciples in America. He even wrote about David to one of his acquaintances in India. But then David drifted away. David, although he was following the four regulative principles at that time, but gradually went back into drugs. He started to take LSD. And it was so bad that his mood changed and he became argumentative. Sometimes he would even talk back to Srila Prabhupada and became quite insulting. And then eventually one day, David went crazy in LSD. And he chased Srila Prabhupada. He wanted to hit Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada quickly ran down the stairs and they followed David chasing him. Prabhupada came to the road and Prabhupada didn't know where to go. The only place he had been driven out of that place. And at that time, Prabhupada contacted one of his young acquaintances, Michael Grant, and told him what happened, that David Allen became crazy. So Michael Grant made some arrangement for Srila Prabhupada in one of his friends' apartments, but they were the young Americans of the mid-60s. They were into drugs, they were into sex, and Prabhupada had to share the apartment with such a couple. And then Prabhupada was asking everyone to get some place where he can have his setup. Then Michael Grant and Carl and a few other boys got together and they found this place for sure, the 26th Second Avenue. And so Prabhupada moves into 26th Second Avenue. So we'll just read from at 26th Second Avenue. There were actually two storefronts. The one to the north was a coin laundry. The next one, there's a passage in between, and then there is this one. And the one on the south had been a gift shop, but was now vacant. Both had narrow entrances, large display windows, and dull paint. Beneath the matchless gift sign was a window 6 feet square. 6 feet square. That a few weeks before had displayed matchboxes decorated with photos of movie stars of the 30s and 40s. The sign, Matchless Gifts, was the only remaining memento of the nostalgic gift shop that had recently moved out. So Prabhupada actually kept the name. It's quite significant. It was already known as Matchless Gift, and what Srila Prabhupada came to give was the Matchless Gift. Below the shop's window, a pair of iron doors in sidewalk hid stone steps to the cellar and boiler room. The wide sidewalk had been laid down in sections of various shapes and sizes at different times years past. Certain sections had cracked or caved in, and a fine dust with tiny sparkling shards of glass had been collected in the cracks and depressions. A dull black fire hydrant stood on the curb, midway between the entrances to the two storefronts was the main entrance to number 26. We can see nothing really changed, or it didn't change much in last almost 50 years. This door opened into a foyer lined with mailboxes and intercoms. And then a locked inner door opened into a hallway leading to the stairs or back to the courtyard. To the left of the gift shop's window was its front door, a dark wooden frame holding a full-length pane of glass. The door opened into the long, narrow storefront, which was now completely bare. So, still now it's bare. No, it's not bare now, it's filled with UR. Just inside, to the right of the door, a platform extending beneath the display window was just the proper height for a seat. At the far end of the bare, dingy room, two grimy paned windows covered with bars opened into the courtyard. So the bars have been, oh, the bars are still there. The bars have been removed and the grills have been put in. Yeah, I remember the grills came near. To the left of the left-hand window was a small sink which has been removed. No, the sink right. has been removed. To the left of the left-hand window was a small sink fixed to the outside of a very small toilet closet whose door faced the front of the store. A door on the store's left wall connected to a hallway that led into the courtyard. So you open the door and we have a hallway leading to the courtyard. The courtyard was paved with concrete geometric sections and encircled with shrub gardens and tall trees. There was a picnic table, a cement bird bath, and the birdhouse on a pole. And near the corner of the courtyard were two shrub gardens. The courtyard was bordered north and south by high walls, and front and back by two tenements. The patch of sky above gave relief. Overlooking the courtyard from the rear building of 26 Second Avenue was Prabhupada's second floor apartment. Before we leave, we will have a darshan from outside. The tenant who is there used to be quite friendly. I remember in the early 80s, he allowed me to go and see the place. But now, I don't think he is that friendly. And maybe so many people have been coming to see the place. One good news is Jadunath here? Yeah, Jadunath just gave a good news. That tenant most probably will be moving out.
Whenever he moves out.
Oh, whenever he moves out. Okay, so we are next in line.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I thought he was going to move out. How old is he?
Same guy.
Oh, same guy.
So
there you are. Okay, most really we won't have to wait for very long. Overlooking the courtyard from the rear building of 26 Second Avenue was Prabhupada's second floor apartment, where he would now live, work, and worship. With help from his Bowery friends, he had cleaned and settled into his new home. In the back room, his office, he had placed against one wall a thin cushion with an elephant print over, and in front of the cushion, his unpainted metal suitcase, which served as a desk. What a humble beginning. Srila Prabhupada, how was he translating? How was he working? So many hours every day, not only every day, every night as well. Just a cushion to sit on with a, actually it was a bed sheet, elephant print on it, at the back, on the covering the wall, and his desk was his unpainted metal suitcase. Which served as a desk. He had set his typewriter on the desk and his papers and books on either side. This became his work area. His manuscripts bundled in saffron cloth, his stock of Srimad Bhagavatam, and his few personal effects he kept in the closet opposite his desk. On the wall above his sitting place, he hung an Indian calendar print of Lord Krishna. Krishna, as a youth, was playing on his flute with a cow close behind him. Lord Krishna was standing on the planet Earth, which carved like a top of a small hill beneath his feet. There were two windows on the east wall, and the dappled morning sunlight filtering in through the fire escape fell across the floor. So this is how Srila Prabhupada has started. And what was Srila Prabhupada doing here? Prabhupada. That day, this is the description of one of the others, Steve, age 26, was a caseworker for the city welfare department. And one day on his lunch break, as he was walking home from the welfare office at 5th Street and 2nd Avenue, he saw the Swami's sign taped on the window there. He had been reading a paperback Gita, and he promised himself he would attend the Swami's class. That day, as he stood with the Swami before the storefront, Howard had also noticed the little sign in the window. So this is the Howard Wheeler, who later on became Hayagriva Das, and Steve became Satsaru Das Goswami. The sign that was pasted on the glass pane was Lectures in Bhagavad Gita, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. So Prabhupada was talking to Howard, and Prabhupada asked him, "Will you bring your friends?" Yes, Howard promised, Monday evening. The summer evening was warm, and in the storefront, the back windows and front door were opened wide. Young men, several of them dressed in black denims and button-down sport shirts with broad, dull stripes, had left their worn sneakers by the front door and were now sitting on the floor. Most of them were from the Lower East Side. Quite different. No one had to go to great trouble to come here. The little room was barren. No pictures, no furniture, no rug, Not even a chair, only a few plain straw mats. A single bulb hung from the ceiling into the center of the room. It was 7 o'clock. And about a dozen people had gathered when the Swami suddenly opened the side door and entered the room from here. He was not wearing a shirt, and the saffron cloth that draped his torso left his arms and some of his chest bare. His complexion was smooth golden brown, and as they watched him, his head shaven, his ears long-lobed, and his aspect grave, he seemed like pictures they had seen of the Buddha in meditation. He was old, yet erect in his posture, fresh and radiant. His forehead was decorated with the yellowish clay markings of the Vaishnavas. Prabhupada recognized big, bearded Howard and smiled. You have brought your friends? Yes, Howard answered in his loud, resonant voice. Ah, very good. Prabhupada stepped out of his white shoes, sat down on a thin mat, faced his congregation, and indicated they could all be seated. He distributed several pairs of brass hand cymbals and briefly demonstrated the rhythm. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. He began playing. A startling ringing sound. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Now it was the audience's chance. Chant, he told them. You have already done that. Some already knew. Gradually the others caught on. And after a few rounds, all were chanting together. Most of these young men and the few young women present had at one time or another embarked on psychedelic voyage in search of a new world of expanded consciousness. Boldly and recklessly, they had entered the turbulent, forbidden waters of LSD, peyote, and magic mushrooms. To most of you, these are all foreign terms. Heedless of warnings, they had risked everything and done it, yet there were merit in their valor. Their eagerness to find the extra dimensions of the self, to get beyond ordinary existence, even if they didn't know what the beyond was or whether they would ever return to the comfort of the ordinary. Nonetheless, whatever truth they had found, they remained unfulfilled. And whatever worlds they had reached, these young psychedelic voyagers had always returned to the lower east side. Now they were sampling the Hare Krishna mantra. When the kirtan suddenly sprang up from the Swami's symbols and sonorous voice, they immediately felt that it was going to be something far out. Here was another chance to trip out. And willingly, they began to flow with it. They would surrender their minds and explore the limits of the chanting for all it was worth. Most of them had already associated the mantra with the mystical Upanishads and Gita, which had called out to them in words of mystery, eternal spirit, negating illusion. But whatever it is, the Indian mantra, let it come, they thought. Let its wave carry us far and high. Let's take it and let the effects come. Whatever the price, let it come. The chanting seemed simple and natural enough. It was sweet and was not going to harm anyone. It was in its own way, far out. As Prabhupada chanted in his own inner ecstasy, he observed his motley congregation. He was breaking grounds in a new land now. As the hand cymbals rang, the lead and response of the Hare Krishna mantra swelled, filling the evening. Some neighbors were annoyed. Puerto Rican children, enchanted, appeared at the door and window, looking. Twilight came. Exotic it was, yet anyone could see that a Swami was raising an ancient prayer in praise of God. This was not rock or jazz. He was a holy man, a Swami, making a public religious demonstration. But the combination was strange. An old Indian Swami chanting an ancient mantra with a storefront full of young American hippies singing with him. Prabhupada sang on, his shaven head held high and tilted, his body trembling slightly with emotion. Confidently, he led the mantra, absorbed in pure devotion. And they responded. More passers-by were drawn to the front window and open door. Some jeered, but the chanting was too strong. Within the sound of the kirtan, even the car horns were a faint staccato. The vibration of auto engines and the rumbles of trucks continued, but in the distance now, unnoticed. Gathered under the dim electric light in the bare room, the group chanted after their leader, growing gradually from a feeble, hesitant chorus to an approximate harmony of voices. They continued clapping and chanting, putting into it whatever they could, in hopes of discovering its secrets. This Swami was not simply giving some 5-minute sample demonstration. For the moment, he was the leader, their guide in an unknown realm. Howard and Keith's little encounter with a kirtan in Calcutta had left them outsiders. The chanting had never before come like this, right in the middle of the Lower East Side, with a genuine Swami leading them. In their minds were psychedelic ambitions to see the face of God, fantasies and visions of Hindu teachings, and the presumptions of it was all impersonal light. Prabhupada had encountered a similar group on the Bowery, and he knew this group was not experiencing the mantra in the proper discipline, reverence and knowledge, but he let them chant in their own way. In time, their submission to the spiritual sound, their purification and their enlightenment and ecstasy in chanting and hearing Hare Krishna would come. He stopped the kirtan. The chanting had swept back the world. But now the Lower East Side rushed in again. The children at the door began to chatter and laugh. Cars and trucks made their rumbling heard once more, and a voice shouted from a nearby apartment demanding quiet. It was now past 7:30. Half an hour had elapsed. Now today we shall begin the fourth chapter, what Lord Krishna says to Arjuna. His lecture is very basic and yet, for restless youth, heavily philosophical. Some can't take it, and they rise rudely upon hearing the Swami's first words, put on their shoes at the front door and return to the streets. Others have left as well as they saw the singing was over. Still, this is the best group yet. A few of the Bauri congregation are present. The boys from Moth Street are here, and they are specifically looking for a guru. Many in the group have already read Bhagavad Gita, and they are not too proud to hear and admit that they didn't understand it. So this is how Prabhupada started. So now I'll just go into we shall call our society ISKCON. Prabhupada had laughed playfully when he first coined the acronym. He had initiated the legal work of incorporation that spring while still living on the Bowery, but even before its legal beginning, he had been talking about his international society for Krishna consciousness. And so it had appeared in letters to India and in the Village Voice. A friend had suggested a title that would sound more familiar to the Westerners, International Society for God Consciousness. But Prabhupada had insisted, Krishna consciousness. God was a vague term, whereas Krishna was exact and scientific. God consciousness was spiritually weaker, less personal, and if Westerners didn't know that Krishna was God, then the International Society for Krishna Consciousness would tell them by spreading his glories in every town and village. Krishna consciousness was Prabhupada's own rendering of a phrase from Srila Rupa Goswami's Padavali, written in the 16th century, Krishna Bhakti Rasabhavita. To be absorbed in the mellow taste of executing devotional service to Krishna. But to register ISKCON legally as a non-profit, tax-exempt, religion required money and a lawyer. Carl Jurgens had already gained some experience in forming religious, political and social welfare groups. And when he had met Prabhupada on the Bowery, he had agreed to help. He had contacted his lawyer, Stephen Goldsmith. Stephen Goldsmith, a young Jewish lawyer with a wife and two children, had an office at Park Avenue, was interested in spiritual movement. When Carl told him about Prabhupada's plans, he was immediately fascinated by the idea of setting up a religious corporation for an Indian Swami. He visited Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue and they discussed incorporation, tax exemption, Prabhupada's immigration status and Krishna consciousness. Mr. Goldsmith visited Prabhupada several times. Once he brought his children, who liked the soup the Swami cooked. He began attending the evening lectures, where he was often the only non-hippie member of the congregation. One evening, having completed all the legal groundwork and being ready to complete the procedures of incorporation, Mr. Goldsmith came to Prabhupada's lecture and kirtan to get signatures from the trustees for the new society. So, and that went on to July 15th when it was all finalized. So that is how, in this historic location, a revolutionary movement started about 44 years ago. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
26 Second Avenue ki
jai.
We lost this place, actually, naturally, this place was too small. And then Prabhupada shifted to, next was Brooklyn, yeah?
Yeah.
And
65.
Oh, 65. Okay. Next one, 65 Second Avenue. And then to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Henry Street, yeah. And then 56th Street, 55th Street. It's so sad that we lost it. This place also we lost, but then we got back. Maybe someday we'll get 55th Street back too. What is $30 million?
You know the story of how we got this back?
I was the GBC at the time. Yeah, maybe you can tell us. We'll hear from Lakshmini Shinipa. Give him the mic. How we got this. Lakshmi Nishinga Prabhu, my very dear godbrother, will now narrate about getting this place back. At that time, you were in Tuaku, yeah?
At that time, I was in
Oh, that time Vishnugada was the president, yeah. Where were you at that time?
I was wandering Mendicant.
Okay.
Not between the two. So.
I didn't know that people said that.
The because I had some regional responsibilities at that time, and I was staying mostly at Skirmerhorn Street, but there was a man on Atlantic Avenue, which is two blocks away from Skirmerhorn Street, and he had a his name was Lenny, and he had an antique store. It was more like a junk store, but he called it an antique store, and he had contact with the devotees when the devotees were here at 26 Second Avenue. He was one of the many people who had passed through those doors and had some experience, positive experience with the devotees. So I befriended him because I was there in Skirmerhorn Street a lot, and I befriended him, and he would come to the temple. We used to call him Weird Lenny because he was a very strange fellow, a very eccentric guy, but he had a good heart and he liked the devotees. So one day he just came through the door of Skirmerhorn Street, very excited, and he goes, "You remember that place in the Lower East Side?" And I said, "Oh yeah, 26 Second Avenue." He said, "Well, the guy that was in here was also a supposed antique dealer, but it was also a junk store. And it was pretty close to the condition that it existed. I mean, it had that light, that one hanging light was still there at the time. So it was in pretty similar condition to when Prabhupada was here. It was a bit more run down because of all the junk that was in here. So Weird Lenny told us that the man who currently had the lease was looking to get rid of the lease. And, you know, were we interested? So Ram Bhadra was also there at Skirmerhorn Street. So you know, Ram and I got very excited, and we agreed to meet this gentleman and try to negotiate, and we tried to drum up support. And I think we did. I forget where the money came from, but we had to buy out the lease. I think it was around $10,000, something like that. And in New York, you can do that. The leaseholder can sell you the remaining amount of time as long as there was a provision in that lease to allow it. So we came, we met with the man. The other side was also available. Both sides. That side was already empty, and this side, the antique store. So we came and we met with the man a couple of different times, and finally forged an agreement, and you know, had some support from the devotees, and you know, very very quickly, once the decision was made to try to get this place back, and with the idea of actually buying the whole the whole tenant, the tenement, both sides. And we tried to get Prabhupada's apartment also, but the man was not interested at all.
Yeah, I remember that. Why did you get the other one?
Why did we not?
Yeah.
Because, like in so many different decisions, we didn't have the manpower, the money was a question, and we were really considering it very strongly to get the other side and to make it maybe like a restaurant or something like that, but we didn't have the manpower or the money, so we felt like we didn't even have the monthly rent for this place, which I think was around $1,500 a month at the time or something. But we felt like we had to do it, and we tried to drum up support around the movement, and we got some support. And of course, you were involved too. You knew about all this.
I arranged the funding.
Huh?
I arranged the funding.
You arranged the financing, of course. Otherwise, how would we get it? So that was kind of the story.
So today we have quite a few programs. Like from here, we go to Tompkins Square Park, where Prabhupada actually went with the devotees. Can you imagine? About 43 years ago, Prabhupada crossed the street with a group of young boys following him, walking down to Tompkins Square Park and having the kirtan with them. And so many people just gathered around, and that's the first time the Americans got to hear about the chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So we'll try to relive those days by going to Tompkins Square Park. And I was just thinking that if you go to the courtyard, practically everything is the same from that time. The same trees are there. They witnessed Srila Prabhupada walking down from here, coming here and listening to Srila Prabhupada's chanting and Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita classes and Chaitanya Charitamrita classes upstairs. In the morning, Prabhupada used to give Chaitanya Charitamrita classes in his apartment. Bird bath.
Yeah.
And the bird house is still there?
The bird house is not there.
Okay. Anyway, the trees are here.
Yeah.
And they will be there for many, many years to come. Telling the story of Srila Prabhupada to the people who would come. When do the temple close?
The Koreans?
Okay, so there's no limit, fixed time that you have to do that. Okay. So, who wants some water? Did everybody get water, those who want? You? It's very kind of... it's very kind of Haraka Prabhu to bring the water for all of you, all of us. Thank you, Haraka Prabhu. And when we go, Lakshmi Nishinga Prabhu will lead the kirtan. Most really, practically most of you probably do not know Lakshmi Nrisimha Prabhu. Lakshmi Nrisimha Prabhu is a very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada. In the early days, Lakshmi Nrisimha Prabhu was holding some very, very responsible positions. Like I told you about 55th Street Temple, that was a 12-story building right in the middle of Manhattan, about few minutes walk from the Fifth Avenue. And that was a gorgeous temple. And it was real pride of Srila Prabhupada. I remember in 1977 in India, whenever some important people came to see Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada would very proudly tell him about 55th Street. So that in New York, we have a 12-story building. And this was the pride of Srila Prabhupada. And Lakshmi Nrisimha Prabhu used to be the temple president of that temple. Were you also the president of Henry Street? Oh, right, you're in Radhadamodar. Yeah, you joined in Radhadamodar also. Vishnu Jan Swami. So,
I stayed one night at 55th Street.
You stayed? Oh, okay.
Adhikeshav Maharaj was there.
Right, yeah. Adhikeshav Swami was the GBC. Should we go now? Everyone ready to go? Or do you all want to stay here? Can you imagine those days the devotees used to stay here? And there used to be a jar of gulab jamuns. And whoever wanted could come and take a gulab jamun. And you know who used to make those gulab jamuns? Srila Prabhupada himself. And you know what was the name of those gulab jamuns? ISKCON bullets. And you know what the slogan used to be?
A bullet a day.
A bullet a day keeps Maya away. Srila Prabhupada ki. Can we open this door?
Yeah.
Then we can go from here.
Yeah, if we can file out maybe this way.